A film from 2024 called Heretic has everyone talking, but nobody's grasping the occult symbolism hidden in plain sight. Some people think it's an anti-Mormon film. Some people say it's anti-Christian. But to me, it's clearly showing us the dangers of the occult practices. I've been podcasting for 11 years talking about this exact subject. 11 being the number of magic is only fitting for you to join me today in the ultimate guide in decoding the film Heretic. Now, today's episode is the May 2025 bonus episode only for the supporters. As you know, supporters keep the show alive, so in return, I give them bonus content, and today is a real doozy, let me tell you. We're going to walk through the ultimate symbolism guide for the film Heretic starring Hugh Grant. I'm going to walk you through this entire film, the cast, the crew, break down the hidden symbolism that connects us into the realm of LDS, Mormon, esotericism, magic underwear, Freemasonry, The Shining, butterflies, CERN, Lucifer, the Zeitgeist Christ conspiracy, which I will debunk thoroughly as a Christian warrior, Mithras, Horus, etc., Gnostic simulation theory, Enochian magic, the occult keys, and the meaning of the ending of this film, which if you've seen the film, you already know there's some strange activity going on here. And if you knew there was some strange activity, you knew where to come. So you are being enlightened into the ways of the occult. So we're going to deep dive into a lot of these ancient practices and beliefs from Plato to Gnosticism, Saturn, death and rebirth rituals, ritual magic, the Brotherhood of Saturn, and much, much more. Get comfortable. This one's going to be very long. It's going to be long. It's going to be strong. It's going to be down to get the friction on. Unless you're free feed losing, then you're just getting a little preview. And you're going to be sad. And you're going to say, damn, why don't I just sign up at patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher? I'll be with all these cool friends in the comment section that Isaac reads through. Oh, man. Life could be so good if I was ad-free, early access, and all this bonus content. He's got hundreds of bonus episodes out there over the years. I could unlock everything right now. But yeah, if you're free feed losing, you're just going to get a extended preview. And if you like what you hear and you're like, you know what? Now's my time. Let's get into it. There's no tariffs on podcasts. Come on. Dive in. Links are always in the show notes. Okay. Now, and if you're already on the supporter feeds, Patreon, VIP section, or Apple Premium, much shout out to you. Thank you so much. You're keeping the show alive. I say that. I mean it. That is you. I owe you my deepest gratitude. Thank you. Now, should you watch this movie, Heretic? You know, I loved it. It's kind of a religious, esoteric horror. It's slightly more thriller than horror. It's an A24 film, so you know it's got a good chance of being great. Like Baby Girl. I loved Baby Girl. I thought that was a great movie. I know a lot of you don't share the same opinion of films, and that's okay. That's okay. It's all right. A24, they also made that movie, Anora. I loved that movie. I thought that was great. But Heretic, we're talking about Heretic. It's 111 minutes long, right? An angel number when you see the three repeating numbers, right? And I'm willing to bet cash money. One of you listening out there has got a 111 tattoo on your little wrist or something. Guaranteed. I'll put a wager on that. Now, who's in it? Mr. Hugh Grant. He plays the main character, Mr. Reed. Oh, Hugh Grant. Been around the world. Been in a million films. The king of rom-coms. Also, he was in a Roman Polanski film called Bitter Moon. He was also in Cloud Atlas. And in Cloud Atlas, which I haven't seen, apparently he had multiple roles, one of which was a cannibal. He was also an Oompa Loompa in the recent Twinkie Wonka. Shout out to Timothy Chalamet. I like Timothy Chalamet. That Bob Dylan movie sucked. If you follow me on Letterboxd, you already saw what I thought of the Bob Dylan movie. What a bummer. I didn't even finish it. It's rare that I won't finish a movie. I had to call it in. I was 2 hours in. I was like, you got to be kidding me. This is the Bob Dylan. I lost respect for the guy. He's so boring. He's a boring a-hole, basically. That's the movie. He's a boring a-hole. Which makes sense because he said he sold his soul to the devil. Remember that on, I don't know, a 60 Minutes interview? He said he made a deal with the devil. But we're picking on Hugh Grant right now. Hugh Grant notoriously fumbled Liz Hurley. In the 90s, he was messing around with these prostitutes. During the AIDS epidemic, no less. Now, to Hugh Grant's credit, and who's she dating now? Who did I see she's dating? Billy Ray Cyrus? Hugh Grant, you fumbled the ball and you gave it to Billy Ray Cyrus, the mullet dude? What are we doing? But to Hugh Grant's credit, at least he didn't hide behind sex addiction. That's what they all do now. Oh, I'm addicted to sex. No, you're just a philandering person. And that, you know, whatever. Like, no judgments. Just own it, right? And I get it. Like, you're rich and famous. You get the P or the D thrown at you 24/7. Like, that's got to be very difficult. And she actually, Liz Hurley didn't leave Hugh Grant for messing around with the pros. She left him 5 years later. Why? It's none of our business. You know what I mean? It's none of your damn business. But during the filming of Heretic, I keep wanting to say Hereditary, another great, I think it was an A24 film as well. During the filming of Heretic, he had a meltdown over the read-through of the script, apparently. And if you Google Hugh Grant Illuminati, the Google AI tells us there's no evidence he was ever involved with the Illuminati. So I guess no Illuminati confirmed for Hugh Grant, as per our AI overlords. Now we've got a couple other main characters. We've got two LDS missionary characters. One is Sister Barnes, played by Sophie Thatcher. Now, she apparently was a Mormon at one time. And she left the faith and said, I don't think it's evil. I just don't think it's right for me. I respect that. She was actually in Yellow Jackets as Natalie, the kid version of Juliet Lewis. I got a lot of requests to finish season two of Yellow Jackets. I'll get on it. I loved the first season. It just went too long before the second season. I forgot everything. I said, ah, crap. Now, she's from Chicago, but she actually lived in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. That Silver Lake, the movie analysis that I'll never get done. Everybody always asks for it. I'm going to get it done soon. There's a couple movies on my radar of things people ask for that I promise you is going to happen. When? I don't know. That includes, I'm going to do Goonies for Cheryl. I'm going to do Fight Club. Someone keeps asking. I can't think of the name. And Under the Silver Lake. I keep getting requests for them. I'm going to do them. To be fair, I also got tons of requests for Twin Peaks, and you guys hated the hell out of that, okay? Ooh, 55 episodes. Yeah, I know. I went a little off the deep end, but I'm back, okay? I'm back. And speaking of Twin Peaks, I made the Grey Lodge available on my Gumroad store. So if you are one of those folks that didn't want to sign up for the supporter feeds, but you always wondered what the 55-episode Twin Peaks occult symbolism deep dive was all about, and you got like 50 hours to burn, you can go buy it right now at gumroad.com/IsaacW. Two A's, double awesome, okay? Links are in the show notes, oh, as always. Go pick up a soft T-shirt. And depending on when you're hearing this, I've got a handful of Laura Palmer shirts and a handful of the Free Feed Loser Super Soft shirts that if you buy the Grey Lodge on my Gumroad, and if I have supplies in stock, I will email you and tell you, hey, what size you wear, homes. I would say homeboy, but it might be a female. I don't know. Homie, what size? I'm gonna send you a free T-shirt. What a deal. It's $50, by the way, for the Grey Lodge series. I know, or you could just pay $5 a month and get in and just consume the whole thing. But hey, some people don't want to do Patreon. That's fine. Next character, Sister Paxton, Chloe East. Ex-Mormon from San Clemente, California. Then a minor character named Elder Kennedy, played by Topher Grace. That's right, Eric Foreman from the 70s show. AKA the only one without the 6 degrees of separation to some crazy pedo. I'm going to put the previews on my YouTube and Rumble and Spotify, so I'm going to be careful with my language. But you know what I'm about to say. And the rumors are that Topher Grace didn't like any of those creeps he was on the show with. So, and I discussed this in the That 70s Show Conspiracy 3-part deep dive, link in the show notes. And I had some people say they don't know where the show notes are. Well, it depends on the app. If you click on the app and, you know, maybe Google or ChatGPT, how do I find the show notes for the Podcast Addict app or the Patreon app? It's right there where the show is. When you hit play, if you just click that little show title again, it'll pull it up. Links in the show notes. And then finally, we've got the written, produced, directed by Scott Beck and Brian Woods from Iowa. These guys created the story and co-wrote A Quiet Place with Jim from The Office, based upon conversations they've had over the years about religion and asking, you know, why do we believe this stuff? Why do we believe this? And they said it was inspired by the film Contact, as a film that discusses religion in a more serious manner. And they had apparently consulted some Mormon friends, and the LDS Church condemned the film's violence against the female missionaries for obvious reasons, right? They send young adults all over the world for 2 years for missions. I mean, I think it's voluntary. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure it's like a voluntary thing. I don't know how much pressure is in the community to have young adults do this, but it's generally, from what I understand, from the ages of 18 to 20, they do a mission, and they get sent somewhere, wherever the church wants them to go, and they walk around for 2 years trying to convert people. The budget for this film was $10 million. Quite the steal, grossing well over $50 million. So, in conclusion, with the cast and crew, we're not off to a real hot Illuminate confirmed start. Sometimes you dig into the cast and crew and directors of these films and you say, my God, it's full of stars. It's full of occult symbolism. Not yet. Not on this one. But I guarantee you the film is. Let's get into the film. Plot spoilers coming. You've been warned. First shot. It appears to be, Twin Peaks vibes. I got a little excited for a second, but we're actually in Boulder, Colorado. Now, Colorado, curious location to choose. It's allegedly the home of the secret society, a rumor we've heard many times over and over, as well as the Denver airports out there with the underground aliens that Bill Cooper talks about. So we're off to a curious location. And we're introduced to the two missionaries of the movie, and they're discussing marketing, talking about the size of rubbers. And they say that magnums are the same size as the regulars. I'd never heard that. They talk about the size of men's units. They use the term P for penis. They won't say the word penis. They'll say P. And then they have a conversation about watching porn. Both pretend they don't watch it, but it feels like the one kind of does. And this is really, I mean, they nailed the Utah vibes for sure, right? If you talk to, and this isn't a diss, you know, I love my Mormon brethren and sistren, but there's a real, in generalities, like a real sort of innocent vibe they put out. They don't swear. They'll say fuh instead of the F-U-C-K word. They'll say shiz instead of S-H-I-T. They'll say effing. You know, and all those things you hear in this movie, in the dialogue, and you'll say, do people talk like that in Utah? Absolutely, 100% they do. It's very strange. Especially, you know, I grew up in the East Coast listening to Howard Stern. What are you talking about? So they discuss about how God showed them that the church is true. Again, this is very typical LDS talk in Utah. And Sister Barnes, she's got some doubts, but you can tell Sister Paxson, she's sort of the true believer, the naive sort of, she's all in, man. And they're doing their thing. They're walking around. Some girls ridicule them. They pull down their skirts and they're yelling about magic underwear. And if you don't know what this is, the LDS folks, they wear white garments underneath their clothes. And from what I understand, they're supposed to always be worn, even during sexy time. I'll call it not so sexy time, but apparently they're supposed to always wear these. And I don't know the reality of that practice, if that's really what happens. But if you live in Utah, you'll see a lot of LDS people that walk around. They always have like white shirts underneath their shirt and stuff. So some take it more seriously than others. I guess old-timey LDS folks used to put on these garments, and when they would take a bath, they would sort of like roll up the sleeve, wash the arm, roll the sleeve down. Roll up the other sleeve, wash the arm, roll that sleeve down. Like, that's how they would wash with the thing on, which is crazy. But then back then, they only took a bath like once a month, right? And allegedly, the magic underwear have symbols sewn into them, the compass and the square. There's an L on the right chest, a V on the left chest, and two horizontal marks, one at the navel and one over the right knee. And of course, the compass and square comes from Freemasonry because Joseph Smith, the founder of Mormonism, was a Freemason. And it is the reflection of as above, so below. It's an occult idea. The compass is the heavens, the square is the earth. All right. And this goes back through Platonic solids with Plato on the cube, which we're going to come back to Saturn. It's a heavy duty element of this movie. So these two missionaries are walking around and they get to Mr. Reed's house. And they're going to meet this guy who was interested in hearing the message. They pull up to the house on their little bicycles. Sister Barnes says, "This is it." Now, that's an LDS phrase. That's a coded phrase. Because Brigham Young, when he got into Salt Lake, he looked out on the vista and said, "This is it." And they have a I think it's called the Heritage Park in Salt Lake. It's called This Is It Heritage Park. It's a whole thing, right? And when Barnes, you'll notice Sister Barnes pulls her phone out and she has a list of names and contacts of who they need to go talk to try to convert. And at the bottom there at the house they're currently are at is Mr. Reed. That's Hugh Grant, okay? So they're at Mr. Reed's house and you'll notice the address is 237 Walnut Street. Now, the 237 is a reference to The Shining, which could totally distract us and take us down this Kubrickian rabbit hole of MK Ultra mind control, which is kind of an element of the film here from what Mr. Reed ends up doing, including the monarch butterfly, which we're going to talk heavily about on this episode, which is seen in The Shining and Heretic. They're both in Colorado, but we're not going to go down that rabbit hole right now. And also, how interesting is it that we never, not in the credits, not in the movie, we never get the name, the first name of Mr. Reed. He has no first name. Which reminds me of the powers of a magician. They take on magical names. Specifically in the LDS, they do a similar practice. They get a secret name in the temple endowment ceremony. Because they get sort of initiated into this, you know, thing. So anyway, they're out front, they're at this play on The Shining house, and it starts raining on them as they're at the door. And Sister Barnes says, "All right, let's get to the baptism." Now, again, I mean, we're barely 5 minutes into this movie at this point. It's raining on them, and they say, "Let's get to the baptism." They're about to be baptized. The water is literally hitting them right now. Baptized into the occult. It's a bit of an inversion. They're not there to baptize Mr. Reed. Mr. Reed has them there to baptize them. So they knock on the door. He answers it. He invites them inside. And they're like, "Hey, we can't come into the house unless there's another woman present, for their safety, of course." And he says, "Well, yeah, wifey's home. Come on in. She's got a pie in the oven for you." So they go in. And he says something really odd to them when they walk in. He says, "The walls and ceilings have metal in them. I hope that's okay. This is a Faustian sort of bargain." We're going to cover that later. They get inside. They look around the room, in the front room there, the living room. And you'll notice the owl figure in the living room. All right. The owl, of course, symbolizes the Athena, the goddess. And part of the argument from Mr. Reed, which we're going to dig deep into when it gets there, is going to be this idea of these ancient religions that Christianity supposedly copied, going back to sun worship, and even older is actually moon worship. And the owl is linked to the goddess worship of Athena or Lilith or Sophia, the goddess of wisdom, the divine feminine, which is part of the Gnostic idea that we're living in a false reality with a false god. And you'll also see the owl at Bohemian Grove or even in Twin Peaks, as you know, and it symbolizes a bit of the guardian of the occult truth. And Barnes looks around and she also sees a window that's in the shape of a hexagon with a butterfly in it. Double, double, illuminate, confirm trouble. Because what we got here is with the flattened hexagon, it's a two-dimensional rendering of the three-dimensional cube, which is symbolic for Saturn. All right. And again, you could tie into the Freemasonic composite square, the Platonic solid, because Saturn is symbolic of the material realm. Again, it's a Gnostic view in reference to Saturn or Kronos. And it gets kind of complicated. It gets into the second law of entropy, decay of the material realm, but it represents the demiurge evil force subjecting us into this prison planet where, through the supposed deception of Abrahamic religions, we worship this false god, the false demiurge. And the Gnostics are like trying to wake people up to be like, hey, you're worshiping the wrong god. You got to worship the correct god. Because Saturn is, it represents, in the Brotherhood of Saturn, represents the final cosmic test, the final gateway for the initiate to overcome. Again, with the Kubrickian stuff, 2001 A Space Odyssey depicts this very well, right? In the Arthur C. Clarke novel form of the movie, Commander Bowman, he gets out there by the wormhole at Saturn, guided by the monolith, the alien intelligence, which enlightens him and sends him down the wormhole, where he becomes an ascended master. It's a the Saturn represents the cosmic gateway with which one can overcome their fear and become a master of their own reality. And again, with the Twin Peaks, I did in my season two, like 3-hour wrap up episode, we talked about this. That was Dale Cooper, stuck in the lodge, trying to cross the abyss. It was the Saturnian cosmic gateway test. But also, on top of the Saturn reference, we have the butterfly, which symbolizes transformation, all right? In the MKUltra Project Monarch, it's done through trauma-based mind control, but it also just, in regular symbolism, symbolizes the awakening or the transformation of the character, the enlightenment of these ladies into Mr. Reed's occult worldview. Now, Mr. Reed, he has them sit on the couch. He goes out back, gets some drinkies, gets a little candle, and they start a conversation about Heavenly Father's plan for him. And we find out through the conversation that Sister Paxton is from Ogden, Utah. Sister Barnes is from Philly, but then she moved to Salt Lake. And I think that's done on purpose. She's not as steeped in the culture and beliefs. There's this thing that in Utah, a lot of the LDS folks here sort of take on a different vibe from out-of-state LDS folks, from what I understand of the culture. The ones in Utah are a little more, religious, I guess, is the best way of putting that. And the ones out-of-state are a little more of the world, so to speak, or it's a good presentation of such. And that's very on the nose to these two characters, right? Sister Barnes has a little more street smart. Sister Paxton is like, I wonder if a pee would feel good, you know, because that's really how they talk. Now, Mr. Reed, he talks about the struggle of knowing what is the one true religion. But he does think it's important to be religious. But as we're going to find out, the one true religion and the religion that he thinks should be important is Gnosticism, or the Saturnian death cult. And Mr. Reed, we find out, knows way more about LDS history than he let on. He spits out the entire story of Joseph Smith being visited by Moroni, which led him to the Golden Plates, and he wrote the Book of Mormon, which he pulls out to show the girls. He's like, see, I got it. He's got all them books on lock. So Mr. Reed asks Sister Barnes if she's had any signs from her dead father since he passed. And Paxton says, well, you know, when I die, I'm going to come back as a butterfly to visit all the my loved ones. And when I come back, I'm going to land right on their hand, right on their fingertips, so they know it's me. At this point, most of the lights in the house cut out, and all of a sudden, Mr. Reed says, it's time for pi and enlightenment. And I'm thinking along the lines of pi, or p as in 3.14, or the golden ratio, which is half of that, which is phi. Again, sacred geometry, esoteric thought. He says to them, how do you feel about awkward questions, which you know is a setup for something terrible coming soon? And he asks them how they feel about polygamy. I mean, he wants to smoke, right? That's the LDS controversy. And the things shift pretty hard. He knows, like, way more than he's letting on. And they're starting to feel it. And Mr. Reed thinks Joseph Smith used polygamy as a way to defend all of his extramarital affairs. And he says, if revelation by God is filtered through man and man lies, how do we know it's true? Sister Paxton says, well, it's more about how it makes you feel. So Mr. Reed starts talking about fast food. He wants to lighten the mood a little bit, right? And it turns out it's just another lesson for him to teach the girls about the different religions. Take a listen to how this goes down.
What about Taco Bell?
We don't talk about Taco Bell.
Why don't we talk about Taco Bell?
We'd have to talk about Taco Bell to talk about why we don't talk about Taco Bell.
All right, so Burger King is number one.
And I think it's trash.
Right, not Jack in the Box.
I vote Wendy's.
I could support.
Good, Wendy's it is. Yeah. Do you know I've never had a Wendy? That came out wrong.
That's okay.
So when I started studying theology, the last thing I wanted to do was find the Wendy's of religions. I was just writing a research paper for a college class, and I was content with dabbling. So some McNuggets here, BK Whopper over there, whatever fit the mood. As I studied the genres, McD, BK, In and Out, i.e. Mormonism, Scientology, Islam, Buddhism, as I got closer to God through genre and rigorous study, as I worked on my personal relationship with Heavenly Father, and I think strengthened it. Do you know what I found? The more you know, the less you know. And by the time I was 50, I was malnourished from the fast food of religion I'd been packing into my brain for the best part of a decade. Every sect, cult, creed, and denomination all claimed to be the one true doctrine. And yet none seem true when held under the microscope. So I wonder what else was out there. I promise you, the last thing I wanted to do was find the one true religion. But unfortunately, I did.
Can we meet your wife? Please.
Of course. Yes.
She just has to be present, and we want to meet her as well.
Sorry. I'll go ask.
Now, things get weird real quick because they won't talk about Taco Bell. Why? More importantly, Mr. Reed is saying that fast food is like religion. You have to kind of check all of them out, get a little taste of everything. Which is what you hear a lot from the story of Aleister Crowley, Helena Blavatsky. They traveled around the world, sampling and taking a variety of different flavors of different religions. That's what Pythagoras did as well, right? They called it synthesizing various religions. And when you read into, what's the book? You guys know the book, The Golden Bough. When you read The Golden Bough, it's kind of what he's saying. He goes around the world and he's like, hey, these are all kind of similar. And Mr. Reed says, the more you know, the less you know. Meaning the more religion he consumed, the more confused he was. Just like eating all fast food. All the time. And he said, look, none of these seem very true until I found the one true religion. Which we're going to come back to. And the girls, they start tripping. They're like, hey, where's wifey at? Because that was the whole deal. We need a woman in here. And Mr. Reed, he's like, okay, I'm going to head to the back. and see how she's coming along with that blueberry pie. Well, Sister Barnes, being the street smart girl, she looks at the candle and spins it around and says it's blueberry pie candle. So now they're like, oh, snap, there's no wifey, there's no blueberry pie. This guy's crazy. And they look at each other and they're like, we got to get out of here. But they can't. The front door is locked, I think, at this point. So Mr. Reed, he's in the back of this dark house down this dark alleyway, and he yells for them. He's like, come on back, ladies. He wants them to go to the back of this dark ass house. And then Sister Barnes fakes. She's like, oh, I got a phone call. And they're like, look, we're just going to go out this front door and run out. But they find that the key to unlock their bikes is in Paxton's coat, which Mr. Reed already took with him. And they're like, that's fine. We don't need the bikes. We're just going to walk. But the front door is locked, like I said. So they can't get out no matter how they want to do this. So this time they for real try to call somebody, but the phone has no signal. Worse yet, a timer switches off, and now the whole house is dark. So they do what one naturally does in a horror movie, and they decide they're going to walk towards the back of this dark house to where Mr. Reed is. And there's a moment when they're walking down this dark hallway, and there's this dark figure in the hallway, and they kind of cautiously walk up to it. Turns out it's just a statue. But wait, what's the statue of? I ran it through my expert analysis software, and meaning I took a screenshot and then looked on the Google, which, by the way, if you're on my Instagram, you can see the screenshots for this movie that I'm talking about. At Isaac Weishaupt on Instagram, follow, like, and subscribe. And you can see all the images I will discuss today. Or if you watch the video version of this, you'll see, I'm going to start putting images on there. It takes me a heck of a long time, but I'm going to start putting the images as I speak on the video, which you can access tier 2 at the Patreon, right? Or tier 2 on VIP section. You get access to the early access, ad-free, bonus content videos. Oh, my goodness. So they walk back. There's a statue, and that statue turns out to be Plato. And the caption says that there's a song playing that's called Just Like a Butterfly That's Caught in the Rain. Lots going on here, right? We've got that butterfly, the metamorphosis thing. We already saw the butterfly once already. We heard Sister Paxton talking about how she wanted to reincarnate as a butterfly. My goodness, what's going on with the butterfly? And what's up with the statue? Well, Plato's the big dog. He's the one who started off all this thinking and philosophizing. He's the first to suggest that maybe the material world is a prison planet. That's like the Plato's cave, the allegory of Plato's cave. It's the same idea. Maybe we're just looking at shadows on the wall. And the simulation, the Gnostic prison planet, is merely a shadow. And from here you go into Neoplatonism, Gnosticism, Hermeticism, Theosophy, New Age, Quantum Thinking, and AI Overlords, and the Digital Matrix. And that's how this is going to go. So that statue of Plato, to me, is a major clue. Major clue. So they go through a door, and they enter this big room that's set up like a church. It's got pews and an altar, various religious pieces. You see a statue of Shiva. That's right, Shiva. And there's a connection to CERN that I said that we would talk about. Because at CERN, there is a large statue of Shiva, the destroyer, out front. Because Shiva is the destroyer that dissolves illusion. So while CERN is splitting atoms, making millions of mini black holes that could consume us all one day, as they try to unlock the prima materia of alchemy, to unlock the philosopher's stone, which was the Higgs boson, God particle. But they could also be time traveling. Who knows? And what's interesting is that in the next scene, right after this, we're going to go through this church scene thing. The women end up going downstairs to be initiated, right? Going underground is Illuminate Confirm 101. Just like CERN, they do the atomic blasting underground. Like Alice in Wonderland. So it wasn't CERN just running a Alice test of some kind? It's called Alice. Anyway, so they tell Mr. Reed, like, look, we got dip. I really like what you're doing in here, and the blueberry pie smells great, but we got to roll. And we're going to need our coats back, you know. And they get their coats back, and they're feeling for that bike lock key, but now it's in Sister Paxton's coat, not Sister Barnes's coat. So they look at each other like, what? Why is that? It's because Sister Paxton is the chosen one, and we're going to find out why. So they ask Mr. Reed for help opening this front door. And he says, oh, well, it won't open. And they're like, yeah, that's what we said. We need help opening it. He's like, no, you don't understand. It won't open. The deadbolts are on a timer. So now if you want to leave, you got to leave through the rear of the house. But these girls, they're not feeling it. But he says, I don't know what to tell you. The front door is locked on the timer until morning. So if you want to go, you just got to walk through my little cellar back door here. And of course, they're like not feeling that. So Mr. Reed, he goes into big speech mode saying about how, you know, you ain't got a lot to kick it because he knows that they can't receive phone calls and they were panicking trying to call people. He's like, fool. I specifically asked you if you were okay with metal in the walls and ceilings when you arrived, and you said yes. And this is a huge part of this. He's like, you know, you were free to leave on your own accord at any time. And this is the nonsense. This is the free will nonsense. It's very Luciferian. It's very deceptive. He technically asked them, but as you already know, it's manipulative and deceptive. If he would have said, hey, if you come in here and are you okay that your phone won't work and the front door is going to be locked, they would have said no. But he deceptively manipulated them in and didn't tell the truth, which is very Luciferian, right? That's a very jerk thing to do. So Sister Barnes asks them, she's like, all right, I'm not playing these games. How do we get out of here? Which door do we need to go out? Because there's two doors. Big speech mode activated again. And he says, well, do you believe my wife is in the next room? Despite all of the evidence so far, or are you indulging a lie? And he puts us in context to their religion. He says, do you believe because you were told to believe? Even though you have all this evidence on the contrary. Sister Barnes, she's like, all right, dude. She chooses a door because she's over him. And she opens it. But what is inside on the other side of that door is a dark staircase to a basement. Which, as you know, in any horror movie, you don't want to go down those stairs. So she closes the door. She tries the other door. Nope, same thing. Another dark stairway to a basement. It's not the backyard or the garden, as the English would say. Meanwhile, at the local LDS church, stake president Elder Kennedy, that's Topher Grace, he's in the church mopping around, looking at the nasty old storm outside. He looks at his little list of missionaries, and he realizes Sister Barnes hasn't checked in today with him. He's like, wonder where she is. Back to Mr. Reed's house. He hits them with a riddle on how they can choose between the two doors, and he pulls out a Monopoly game, cues up the song by the Hollies, The Air That I Breathe on vinyl, and he compares the Monopoly to the Bible. He's like, look, this is picked up by over a billion people, but only finished by a few. Then he pulls out the Landlord's Game, which is the predecessor to Monopoly, which you're going to hear about. I'm going to play the clip. The original game, which was created by a feminist to teach about the evils of capitalism, and then as capitalism would consume its own self, some guy stole it from her and called it Monopoly and made it a pro-capitalism game. Anyway, he talks about the teachings being iterations, implying that religion does the same thing. And he also compares it to the Holly song, which got chopped and screwed over the years similarly. Take a listen.
Come back to that. You are, or are you not, monotheist?
We believe in Heavenly Father, yes.
Okay. There are three major monotheistic religions: Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. I call them the big three. Judaism, i.e., the original edition, Christianity, i.e. the most popular edition, and Islam. The newer, second most popular edition. May I see your Book of Mormon, please? I'll give it back. Thank you. And finally, after 800 years, this Mormonism, i.e. the Zany Regional Spin-off Edition. These are all iterations of the same source material. These texts share many of the same characters and histories, albeit presented with different meanings and perspectives. So, no, I will not accept that you stand there and tell me that you've never heard the air that I breathe by the hollies, when I know that you have heard Creep by Radiohead. Oh, yes, you have. Come on. But I'm a creep. Huh? I'm a weirdo. Okay. What the hell am I doing? I know these are things you're thinking right now, but they're also lyrics you recognize, yes? Yes? The Hollies filed a plagiarism lawsuit against Radiohead, which they later settled by proving that the melody and rhythm of The Air That I Breathe appear in Creep. How old are you, 19 or 20? Something like that. Okay, so maybe you know Lana Del Rey, who remarkably was sued by Radiohead for plagiarizing Creep in her 2017 song, Get Free. Iterations. Over time. Diluting the message, obscuring the original. Judaism is the OG monotheistic religion, which should by a wide margin have the most number of practicing members. And yet it makes up only 0.2% of the world's population. Why is that? Why is the original less popular than the iteration? Is it any less true than the others?
Are we talking about religion or board games or music?
Yes. It has the fewest members because it doesn't advertise. Doesn't have people like you. Knocking on doors. Selling people a better life, a better board game, a better song. You ever think about that? How missionaries are really just salespeople for an organization. The product you're selling is an idea. You knock on my door and you sell. Maybe I buy, maybe I don't buy. Those are the rules of engagement when I invite you into my house. We are negotiating a transaction of ideologies. And what I'm trying to say to you tonight is that I have an idea which I would like to sell to you.
So he asks about their beliefs in monotheism, right? Worshipping one singular God. And how the big three, those are the Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. And it spins off into talk about Mormonism and such. And how basically all these iterations come from the same source material. Like the Holly song, which was part of Radiohead's song Creep, and then Lana Del Rey's Get Free. They all dilute and obscure the original song. He says religion is the same thing, and the thing that makes LDS Mormonism more popular than Judaism is the advertising, because they have active salesmen. And then he says he has an idea he wants to sell them. Why does he say this? I believe this is an initiation and indoctrination into him starting a new religion, him trying to popularize a flavor of Saturnian Gnosticism. And here's where it gets interesting, because he goes through all these ideas of the religious iterations being a conduit to a more ancient truth. And this is something you've heard about a million times, from Zeitgeist to the late and great Jordan Maxwell. Even David Icke, one of my red pill daddies, talked about this. But I'm going to debunk all that here in a second. And you're going to hear this clip. And what you're going to hear, in case you're not watching the video version of this, you're going to hear him talk about these religious iterations, and that's going to be mixed in with clips of Elder Kennedy trying to search for the missionaries. So, you know, don't get too confused when it sounds like the audio changes. Here you go.
My argument is that the holy texts which we revere are just mythological iterations of stories which ancient people have been telling each other for centuries. They're not true or real in any literal sense. They are merely a conduit to a more ancient truth. The story of a savior who was born to a virgin, who could perform miracles, and was supernaturally resurrected, was a very popular story for at least 1,000 years before Jesus was born.
One of them has blonde hair, one of them has brunette, both dressed similar.
No, never stopped by.
Mithras performed miracles, he was marked by the sign of the cross. Horus walked on water, was crucified, had 12 disciples. Krishna, he was a carpenter, born to a virgin, baptized in a river, rose from the dead, and ascended into heaven. This little gallery depicts 12 gods who were born on December the 25th, all of whom predate the existence of Jesus. I am sorry, but it is impossible to ignore the influence of one narrative upon another, or to ignore the fact that all these stories iterate into Star Wars, Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. Can you imagine thousands of years from now people accepting Jar Jar as a significant religious figure?
So Mr. Reed, he goes through basically the same claims made on the Zeitgeist documentary in quotes. He's like, look, all these religions are the same. God born of a virgin birth, performed miracles, resurrected, you know, born on December 25th. He says all these gods, Krishna, Horus, Mithras, they're all the same thing. Same thing as Christ. Same story. And this is the thing that bugs me. Because, look, every religion, Christianity even, there's plenty of, like, places you could dig at it. But this isn't one of them. This is just a straight-up lie. Even snarky atheist Bill Maher, you know, all these types that they worship science as the end-all, be-all, even though science can be deceptive and wrong, just like a religion, they cite this same claim that, oh, yeah, Christ's story has been told a million times by everyone thought that all these other gods did the same thing. And you dig into the source material for some of the books, they're not based on any legitimate sources or references. So it's funny to me because people like Bill Maher, who are super pro-science when they want it to be, that's the problem with science. It's bulletproof until it disagrees with what they want it to be, right? So even Bill Maher, who's this pro-science guy, he's not following the sort of scientific method of proof, right? Because these claims are straight up lies. They're fabricated. There's no proof of any of this. It comes from, and there's several books written about this over the years that build upon this. A big one is called The Christ Conspiracy. And if you research, because look, I'm no theologian, but every scholar and expert says these Zeitgeist claims are just completely fabricated and completely untrue. So let's go through a couple of them. Horus the Elder, because there was two Horuses. There was Horus the Elder, absolutely not born on December 25th, believed to be born in July or August in the epigominal days, which are the 5 days added to the 360 days to make it 365, so it can be a complete solar year. And for what it's worth, the birth of Christ isn't December 25th either, right? The Bible doesn't even tell you when it is. It may, in fact, have been selected. And it's kind of irrelevant in the sense of Christ fulfilling the prophecies. The Orthodox Church celebrates the birth of Christ January 6th, the Feast of the Epiphany of Christ's birth, because they follow the Julian calendar, not the Gregorian calendar, which is where that December 25th comes from. But the belief is that he was actually born in the spring, because the Bible says that there were shepherds in the fields. Then you've got Horus, the son of Isis, who was actually not born on December 25th. It was born outside of time because Osiris was dead and it was a magical birth. As you know, the story, Set tore apart Osiris's body into all these pieces, and Isis went around crying, picking him up, and she found all of them but his wiener. So she took a gold phallus and mounted it and then rode it, and then through the magic of Thoth, created Horus. So, not a virgin birth story. No Star of the East is part of the Horus story either. No source of Horus being greeted by three kings. No, you know, there's no stories of Horus being a teacher at the age 12. There's no baptism in the story. There's no 12 disciples. He apparently had 4 followers and 16 blacksmiths. And symbolically, there are some themes that do overlap. Like, Horus is considered a bit of a savior figure because he kills Set, who's evil, right, to avenge his father's death. But it's not this verbatim copy that Mr. Reed and Zeitgeist and Bill Maher's religious falsely claim. Straight up lie that it's this verbatim copy. There's no walking on water story of Horus. There's no crucifixion. There's no story of him dying and resurrecting 3 days later. It's nonsense. Same with Mithras, right? Mithras wasn't born on December 25th. He never died, so there's no death and resurrection. He was born from a stone, not a virgin. We did a whole series on Raised by Wolves years ago where we talked about the cult of Mithras. And then one more example, Dionysus, not born of a virgin. She had an affair with Zeus. No reference of a December 25th birth. Dionysus was known for wine, but she never turned water into wine. Let's see, what else do I got in my notes here? Yeah, none of this really matters. But anyways, there's this whole story about Dionysus being ripped apart by Titans and his heart turning into a seed so a new mother could rebirth him in a way. Not exactly a 3-day death and resurrection, but even that story of the heart was apparently a myth that came out after Christianity. So in conclusion, Mr. Reed did not study all the religions after all. Now, Reed points out that if God, Mr. Reed points out that if God watches us play with ourselves and hates the GAYs and demand that we worship him, that's actually pretty terrifying. But then he says, also, if there's no God and we just evolved from bacteria on a floating rock in the middle of space, that's also terrifying. And what he does is he writes on the two doors that they have to pick from. They got belief and disbelief. And he asks them to choose which door they want to go down based on their beliefs. And he thinks that all 10,000 religions are totally fake and they're as fake as a capitalistic monopoly game. And at this point, he angrily tosses the Book of Mormon on the floor, which Barnes picks up. And she spots a letter opener as a little stabbing device, foreshadowing. So Mr. Reed, he has them choose which door they want. Sister Paxton wants to choose disbelief to cater to Mr. Reed's desires. She even says, choose the right, an LDS phrase. But Sister Barnes, she holds it down. She thinks Mr. Reed is omitting stuff from the argument. And she even points out, she says, Horus had a bird head. Christ didn't have a bird head. So it was Sister Barnes and Sister Paxton. Both end up going down the door on the left, the belief door. That's the left-hand path, sort of. If you look at it symbolically, we'll talk about why. They go down the stairs, and they enter a circular room that has a roof that leads to apparently outside, but it's too high up, right? It's super dank, super dark. And there's also a door in the room that presumably leads to the other stairwell, the disbelief door. So Sister Barnes, she's trying to stack up. There's a little table and a little chair in the room, and she can't, even if she stacks them up, she can't reach to the top to escape. Here comes Mr. Reed down the stairs. And Sister Barnes finds a board with 3 giant nails in it, and she hands Sister Paxton the letter opener before Mr. Reed can get down there. And she tells Sister Paxton, she says, if anything happens, I want you to stab Mr. Reed in the neck. I'll say the code word magic underwear. And at that point, we're going to stab him in the neck with this letter opener that she stole from the Book of Mormon. So at this point, the disbelief door opens. And here comes a barefooted, dirty cloaked figure with a lantern and a plate of blueberry pie. And this creepy person does this weird little squat. And the girls are looking at her like, what is this? And then the Hollies comes piping through there's a pipe into the room. And it's Mr. Reed singing Radiohead's Creep. And he's up in a room and he's recording a diary of events. And he's playing with a miniature replica of the house with these people in it. And that replica is important to the story. You see it in the movie poster. We're going to cover that later. But for some reason, it's important. All right. So this weird lady, this woman in a cloak, she's doing some weird yoga moves and she's chanting. And Sister Barnes goes up to that disbelief stairwell and she finds a small door in the stairwell that she can't quite open. She gets to the top of the stairs and she looks under the door and she sees a box of matches in Mr. Reed's room. Because now the doors are closed, okay? So Mr. Reed, through that pipe, he gives them some instructions. He says, look, you're about to witness a true miracle. Take a listen.
Now in the presence of a living prophet of God.
Are you sure before I introduced you to her?
Not sure about what?
You are now in the presence of a living prophet of God.
The reason I invited you into my sanctuary tonight is because I have been shown a miracle. I believe this miracle is proof that all known religions are demonstrably false and only an ancient echo of something true. I need a witness, you, to verify that the miracle is real. Pies, I think. Traditional one. The ingredients include butter, flour, cornstarch, sugar, lemon, blueberries, of course. But tonight I've also included some wolfsbane and some belladonna. Which means that in a short while, the prophet will be dead from consuming the pie. Then you will witness a miracle. By the grace of God, she will be resurrected.
Always with the blueberry pie. So Reed, he's talking through the pipe, and he tells the girls, he's like, you're in the presence of God. This God will prove a miracle that disproves all religion. They're about to witness this miracle, and their job is to verify that it's real. And the woman starts eating the blueberry pie that's laced with wolfbane and belladonna, which is going to kill her. She's a prophet, which will then, they will confirm that she's dead, and then she will be resurrected. Also, something weird in this scene, he is working that little diorama upstairs while all this is going down. He carves up a little figure. And he places that figure at the front door of the diorama. The diorama is a replica of his home. So he places a little figure at the front door. Interesting. So this woman, she eats the pie. She passes out. Mr. Reed makes them verify that she has no pulse. They do it. He logs all this in his little diary. He makes them verify she's not breathing and thus she is dead. And here's the thing. They're doing this in the pitch black. They're under a lot of stress. I mean, how accurate, they, you know, they put their finger on her neck. I mean, how accurate can that be? But whatever. So they wait. She's dead. And they're waiting for her to resurrect. And the prophet will then tell them what she saw in the afterlife. But wait, the doorbell rings. Now, how did Mr. Reed know that would happen? He facilitated that. He put that little figure at the front door of the diorama. And then the doorbell rings. He made that happen. He willed that like a magician of the occult. Sympathetic magic a bit. And this is a strange part of the story because he's apparently able to manifest reality through the diorama. I think Mr. Reed's Illuminate confirmed. It's fair to say. So he walks towards the door. The girls are going to scream so that this visitor can hear them. And Mr. Reed sets up his little timer and opens the front door, and it's Elder Kennedy. He's looking for the two girls. He can't hear them screaming, by the way. The girls are still trying to escape. They try to go through that little side door, no luck. They try to get the matches now, I guess, to start a fire. And Elder Kennedy, he's pushing back on Mr. Reed a bit because he shows that Mr. Reed had requested Sister Barnes and Sister Paxson to come to his house for information. Nonetheless, he ends up leaving. And the girls, they're sliding that rug. They're trying to get the matches. Then the doorbell rings again. It's Elder Kennedy back again. And he just hands Mr. Reed a booklet. So the girls run downstairs now that Mr. Reed's coming back to the room, the church room. And they look at the dead woman. And Sister Paxton believes that the woman's head has moved in the moment that they've been up the stairwell trying to get the matches. So they got the matches. They're trying to light a fire. Meanwhile, old girl wakes up and she's spewing blueberries everywhere. And she starts talking about some wild stuff. Take a listen.
Doctor says my name. Why?
Passage to the other side. Your prophecy will be recorded into our liturgical text. Yeah? Come, you must be exhausted. Take my oath.
Now, she says what seems to be nonsense. What you can catch on the subtitles is, conductor says my name, white clouds, not heaven, they unplug my brain, it is not real. Then Mr. Reed finally shows up. He walks downstairs, tells the prophet thank you, and she can go rest now. And Mr. Reed says that one of those two girls has a big secret that they're going to get to here soon. But let's talk about the prophet resurrection. He says that he wants their statements on what they saw, and he's coercing them. Sister Barnes even says, like, hey, we're your prisoners. This is not a valid experiment. But Mr. Reed's like, no, you're able to leave whenever you want, again with that crap. Sister Paxton appeases Mr. Reed, and Mr. Reed says he can show them God if they're willing to go through that same process. They can die and resurrect just like these prophets. You can eat the blueberries and die too, apparently. So he can answer all the questions that they have about death and the afterlife. He says, what's more comforting than knowing what's on the other side? Don't you want to be under my stairwell with a dirty cloak and dying from blueberry pies? Oh, man. Sister Barnes, she says, how will he make killing us our idea? She's very astute as to Mr. Reed's deception. He is definitely Luciferian. And she calls him out and says, this wasn't even a miracle. And he wants her to tell him what happened. And she says, it was a magic trick. And at this point, she reveals how she actually had literally died from the Taco Bell. That's why she didn't want to talk about Taco Bell. She died from E. coli. Shots fired at Taco Bell. Take a listen.
I tell you what's frightening. Not knowing is frightening. Where do we come from? What are we doing here? What's our purpose? The terror of those questions is why religions exist. I can answer those questions for you. I can give you a comfort no religion in the world is capable of giving you.
It all makes sense now. I've been asking myself all night, how is he going to make killing us our idea?
Sister Barnes, you're in a muddle.
I know. I can't tell if you're playing chess or checkers.
Monopoly? Come on, it was right there.
You didn't show us a miracle.
Okay, what did I show you?
That wasn't a miracle.
So you said, what did I show you?
That was not a miracle.
What did I show you?
It was a magic trick.
A magic trick.
You wanna know why we don't talk about Taco Bell? They killed me when I was 4 years old. 50 people were hospitalized from an E. coli outbreak. The kids at school called me Taco Hell because I was clinically dead while doctors operated on my kidneys. When I was dead, I saw exactly what your prophet described. A blinding white light, clouds but not heaven, a sense of wanting to return, a feeling that my state of reality wasn't real. That wasn't a prophecy. That was a near-death experience. When the oxygen leaves your brain or your heart stops pumping, your mind creates unbelievable things. I think you've been keeping this woman on the edge of death in order to ask her questions about meaningless hallucinations so that you can substantiate your idea of what the one true religion really is.
Did you know that when you remember something, you're really only remembering the last time you remembered that experience?
You're not actually recalling the event, so your memory of dying at Taco Bell isn't really of dying, it's of the memory of the memory of the memory of the memory of the memory, stop me, of that event. So you're remembering a false correlation with the experience you've just witnessed.
But this is happening right now. And that's why I think, Sister Barnes, Sister Paxton, that you really need to pay attention, because I promise you we're not talking about a magic trick.
No, we're talking about magic underwear.
So apparently when she died from her chalupa, she saw the same thing the prophet described, feeling that reality wasn't even real. So this woman had a near-death experience, not a prophecy, and Mr. Reed uses that woman to support his own beliefs that there is only one true religion and we're living in a simulation. And at this point, Sister Barnes gives that code word, magic underwear, but before Sister Paxton can stab Mr. Reed, Mr. Reed slices Sister Barnes' throat with a box cutter. Again, he's like a magician who knows what's going to happen before it happens. So now Sister Barnes, she's bleeding out on the floor. Done. And Mr. Reed is sitting by her, and he's smiling, and he grabs her arm, and he cuts it open, and removes a little metal implant. And it's dark when he does it. He's like, oops, there was a vein. Creepy. And he tells Sister Paxton, he's like, she isn't coming back to life because she's a program. She's not even real. Excuse me? Yeah, he said he knew that she was a robot because of the candles. Like, he ran his hand over the candles and fire reacts to, he says the fire reacts to simulation NPCs differently. So he's basically saying she was an NPC robot person. And, you know, we should pause for 1 second here, because Sister Barnes, who actually died and was born again through her Taco Bell trauma, is now dead again. I think that's important. So he asks Sister Paxton about the Taoist butterfly dream and a Chinese philosopher saying, you know, am I a man dreaming of a butterfly, or am I a butterfly dreaming of a man? Meaning, like, is this a dream world? Is it a real world? We don't know. And this is the whole idea. He starts telling her, like, we live in a simulation. This is Gnosticism 101, right? And he tries to support this claim because this crazy homeless lady that he's got as a slave eating blueberry pies said that it wasn't real. And at this point, Mr. Reed draws up a diagram on the table, and I'll put the image on the Instagram. You can see it. It looks like the towel cross, right? Because the vertical and the horizontal of the towel cross is where the spiritual heavenly realm, the vertical, meets the material realm, the horizontal. I think we talked about this kind of idea with the Wizard of Oz, of the Wicked Witch, of the East and West, and North and South, and all that. So he assures Sister Paxton that, look, you can die and come back to life like this prophet. He's trying to get that blueberry pie death and rebirth ritual going on here. He's like, look, Sister Barnes, she was a robot, obviously. But then Sister Paxton, she's not as naive as she put on. She says, that was a birth control implant, not a microchip. But Mr. Reed says, why would a missionary be on birth control? Could be for hormonal reasons, Mr. Reed. Maybe if you were around women, you would know better. So Sister Paxton, she says, look, the simulation hypothesis isn't testable. And I'm like, whoa, Sister Paxton coming with the heat. Mr. Reed says, well, it's a belief like any other religion. And she begins to feel like something's gone wrong tonight. And he's now pivoting to try to make her believe in a simulation theory now. And she thinks that he swapped out the prophet, this woman, switched out the bodies. That's why the head had moved. She noticed the head moved. And when the doorbell rang, they swapped out the bodies to put this illusion like something happened. And this new prophet, it went off script when she said it is not real, which is throwing Mr. Reed off on the side tangent of simulation theory and so on. So Sister Paxton, she reveals, she's like, look, there's a hidden door under this floor. And she opens it up. And Mr. Reed says, look, if you think I was being deceptive, that means there's a dead body down that door, down that hole in the floor. And he asks her, he says, let's test your theory. Why don't you go down that hole, going further underground? And she says she wants to know the truth. And the only way out is through, which, although it comes from Swamp Thing, that was a comic created by Alan Moore, an avid occultist, a magician, comes from Carl Jung's idea of confronting the shadow, another Gnostic. And he warns her, he says, don't go down there unless you're ready to know the one true religion, meaning this is some kind of test, and it's the test of this Saturn. This is the cosmic gateway. So she goes down the ladder, finds the dead body, boom, she was right. Unfortunately for her, Mr. Reed slams the door shut. So she proceeds down the room to find another locked door. She opens it. Enters another room with various religious items, sees another door, opens it. There's four interior doors that she had to go through, plus that fifth door opening in the floor. And you'll notice, I'm going to play the clip here, but you'll notice in like the third room, there was an all-seeing eye inside of a heptagram painted on the door, and it resembles Aleister Crowley's Star of Babylon, the divine feminine, but it's actually an inverted form of it. We talked about the owl earlier. But take a listen to the clip.
Thank you.
Now, to deep dive into what these images are, the fourth room has an inverted pentagram with some Satan books. I can't tell if they're real or not because when I search for them, nothing comes up. But I also have a hard time reading the titles because it's not very clear to me. I could see elements of the title that says the Satanic Judgments, or another book says To the Histories of Satanism. Also on the door, you'll see what appears to be the symbol of a butterfly. And the script around the circle looks very Enochian. Which, if it's Enochian, that unlocks a lot of other mysteries, right, of the occult. So the next room, the final room, is locked with the bike lock, which she has the key in her pocket, right? It's their bike lock. Remember, Sister Barnes originally had the key, but Sister Paxton was the one with which he was trying to initiate. So she pulls out the key, and the key is the most occult symbols of all Illuminate confirmedness. It's about unlocking the secret teachings or accessing the shadow realm for the uninitiated. And it's on the cover of Manly P. Hall's book, The Lost Keys of Freemasonry, a book about how the Freemasons are part of this universal true religion, the one true religion. So she walks through this series of rooms and doors and enters the final room. And this room has these prophet women all locked up in cages. And the whole sequence of entering like one small room after another is part of the initiation through various chambers to transform the candidate. I went to Zach Bagans' museum, what's it called? The Haunted Museum in Las Vegas. And there was this tunnel, like you could crawl through this tunnel between rooms. And I don't remember what it was about, but he said something about how it was an initiation ritual for some secret society. You couldn't take notes or have a phone, but I remember that very, because I crawled through it and I was like, oh, this is kind of creepy. So here comes Mr. Reed. Now they're in the final chamber here. He says, have you figured it out yet? Have you figured out what the one true religion is? And Sister Paxton replies, and she breaks it down Scooby-Doo style. Take a listen.
What is the one true religion, Sister P?
When we first arrived, you left us alone in your living room. We thought you were talking to your wife, but you were doing something else.
I was.
You took a key from Sister Barnes' coat, went outside to unlock our bikes and hide them. I noticed your hair was wet when you came back with the drinks, like you were out in the storm. You did this, I assume, because you didn't want the Elder to find our bikes when he came back looking for us. But there was something else on your mind.
There was.
You returned the bike key to the wrong coat pocket. We thought this was a mistake you made. But now I know it wasn't.
Why?
You gave the bike lock to one of your prophets. Instructed them to lock the final cellar door with it.
But why did I do that?
Because you wanted me to know the only reason I'm standing here right now is because it is exactly where you want me to be standing. I'm not here because I chose to be. I'm here because you made me choose to be. Because you want me to believe the one true religion is control.
That is exactly right. Religion is just a system of control.
It's okay. I'm gonna help you.
No, you see, that's what's so interesting. They don't want your help. They are exactly where they chose to be.
But you killed that woman.
I disagree. She chose to eat a poisoned pie because of her profound faith. It is called drinking the... anyone? Kool-Aid. It is true that I keep these ladies a little chilly and a little peckish, for which I'm very sorry. Sorry, ladies. but only for the same reason that your church goes to Haiti to give out Bibles after a hurricane. It's easier to control someone who has lost everything. You're absolutely right. She did go off book.
Why do you do this?
The question is, why do you all let me?
So Mr. Reed was plotting and scheming the whole time, very Mephistophelian. And Sister Paxton says the whole thing was coordinated to make her choose to make it this far. And the one true religion is control. And Mr. Reed concurs. Religion is a system of control is what he's trying to teach her. And he makes it sound like, oh, these women in the cages are there by choice. But remember, he's Luciferian, just like they were in there by choice, quote unquote. He says the same reason churches go to Haiti and hand out Bibles when they need help. And she's like, why do you do this? And he says, why do you let me? Oof. Because we want to believe in the goodness of humans, right? So he is the demiurge. He's the false god, coordinating them through the simulation world that he's creating through the diorama. He coordinated the whole thing. That's how he knew that she was, Sister Paxton was going to be left. That's how he knew that they were going to try to stab him with a letter opener. That's why he got Sister Barnes in the throat first. That's why he had the figure at the front door before it rang. The whole thing, he was a god in this little realm of magical occultness. He predicted every decision she made the whole night because he knows who she is. Someone controlled by religion and told what to do. Including the garments, the magic underwear. And right on cue when he says that, she jams the letter opener right into his dumb throat. And she runs back up. She gets out of there. And this is a very bizarre scene. Because you see her running around the house trying to escape. And it's happening in the diorama itself. It's given Nightmare on Elm Street Dream Warriors right now. What's going on with this diorama? We know it's part of the actual environment. It's part of how the magical workings of Mr. Reed and his occult Gnostic teachings of creating reality. It's a microcosm, macrocosm thing. As above, so below. He's making it happen on the micro, and the universe is making it happen on the macro. As she's running, she sees Dante's Inferno artwork on the wall. We got a shot of the camera showing us the inversion. And she ends up going back down into that basement room. That's why it's a horror movie, right? Going back into the places we know you shouldn't go. And at this point, Mr. Reed is down there, and he jams the box cutter into her abdomen. He's still alive. What a turn of events. And of course, this makes sense because she passed that artwork of Dante's Inferno, which is about Dante going onto a spiritual journey into hell with Virgil. We discussed this on the analysis of the awful horror movie called The House That Jack Built. I say awful in the sense that it made me a little uneasy. Not many movies can do that. But I did a two-parter on that a while back. Link in the show notes. So all three of these people are dying in this room now. Right? Mr. Reed can barely talk. He's bleeding out. He says, pray for us. And Sister Paxton, she's bleeding out from getting stabbed. She says, praying doesn't work. What? She asks Mr. Reed if he's heard of the Great Prayer Experiment when they divided up people into two groups, one that got prayed for and one that didn't. And the results were inconclusive, but she thinks that it's actually beautiful that we even think about others. And here's the beauty of Sister Paxton. She started out seeming so naive, but she's super aware the whole time. She wasn't brainwashed at all like her character put on. She was just a good person who wanted to see the best in humanity. So she begins to pray. And Mr. Reed is crawling over to her, and he's dying, she's dying. And he tries to slice her throat while she's praying. This guy's the devil. Except here comes Sister Barnes in the clutch, back in action. And she's barely alive, but she's got that board with the three nails in it, and she catches him right in the dome. Boom. No shorts, no losses for Sister Barnes. She died and resurrected a second time. And then she dies again. Now she's really dead. So the third time. So the Taco Bell gordita And then the box cutter, and now she just kind of like her last ditch effort to save Sister Paxton and takes her out. She dies in Sister Paxton's arms. So now Sister Barnes and Mr. Reed are for sure dead. And Sister Paxton, she's bleeding, but she's still alive. She gets upstairs. She dismantles the diorama and finds an exit, and she ends up escaping out of the window. Now, as she's escaping this Saturnian diorama hellscape, a butterfly ends up on her hand, and just like that, it disappears like an illusion. And the credits roll. They're playing Knocking on Heaven's Door. Ironic, because the door's used in the film, and the song originally sang by Bob Dylan, who said he sold his soul to the devil. And if you watch the final credits, at the very end of the credits, it says, "This motion picture was made on the traditional and unceded territory of..." And then it has tons of gibberish with Native American tribal names. The gibberish is like AI wrote it or something. And I don't know what that's about. It's very strange. The tribal names are real. I checked those out. But the gibberish stuff, I don't know what that is. And then you'll see in the credits at the very final frame, it says Blueberry Pie LLC. What is going on in this movie? Well, in conclusion, we're going to wrap it up for you. In conclusion, what do we got? Lots of butterfly symbolism, first off. Clearly a major symbol we're supposed to focus on. For bonuses, if you look up the vinyl record version of this soundtrack for Heretic, you'll see a prominent butterfly front and center. And you'll also see inverted pentagrams that can be found on the Salt Lake City Temple. True story. Also, you'll see the Saturn hexagram surrounded by the symbols that you'd find on the magic underwear, the Freemason, compass, and square. Which, by the way, on the Salt Lake City Temple, you also see Saturn stones. They got moonstones, sunstones, and Saturn stones. And inverted pentagrams and all kinds of stuff. Now, if you recall the butterfly talk we've had throughout this whole movie, right? Sister Paxton said she was going to reincarnate as a butterfly. There's a butterfly in Mr. Reed's home. The songs are playing of the butterfly. And Mr. Reed is talking about the Taoist butterfly dream. And so on. So what does it all mean here? Well, Mr. Reed is trying to indoctrinate them into believing that we're living in a simulation based on his occult leanings. And he is apparently a master occult magician who somehow has mastered a bit of time and space through his diorama that apparently controls and foresees the future, but he didn't see the three nails getting one in the dome piece. He didn't see that coming. Which three nails is very interesting, because you've got the Christ metaphor, right? Christ was crucified on the cross with three nails, two through the hand and one through the feet. And Mr. Reed, he's illuminated firm, but he's also an insane person. He has stared into the abyss far too long, and he has lost his mind. Remember, he thinks that Sister Barnes is a robot, and the candle could tell you if someone's real. He was wrong about the comparative religion, and he's Luciferian, right? Being very deceptive and trying to lie to himself so that he gave these women free will. He's given Flat Earth Society vibes in a way. That he's convinced we're living in a simulation and thinks everyone else needs to believe it. And he was trying to initiate these women into his occult beliefs of a false Gnostic world. Because there is this idea that these Luciferian types love to get off on converting people from Christianity. That's the thing. He hates it so much. So he uses these occult magic skills to bind them under his will via the diorama and forces them through this initiatory experience, which was all an illusion. And he thinks he's a modern day Plato, and he wants them to be the first members of his Saturnian religion, like the Brotherhood of Saturn from 1920s Germany. And I would go further and say that if these two women would have stayed around, they would have been conducting sex magic rituals with Mr. Reed. Because the Brotherhood of Saturn, they were into Lucifer, sex magic, and they were subscribing to the idea that Saturn was a force of initiatory cosmic occult knowledge. It was the guardian of the threshold. And Lucifer is the liberator who brings knowledge or gnosis of the false simulation world. And you'll notice that on the vinyl soundtrack, Mr. Reed is shown in Dante's Inferno next to the word Lucifer. I'll put the images on the Instagram. Check it out. Now, I was trying to look up the meaning of all this. I rewatched the ending, and, you know, like I said, we have the three nails of Christ. So I'm wondering if there's a savior mythology of the story. And if there is, it's got to be Sister Barnes, right? Because she saves Sister Paxton. She died three times. And then seemingly resurrected as a butterfly, reincarnated as a butterfly, landing on Sister Paxton's hand. And the underground ritual room is in the shape of the hexagram. If you look at it, it's Saturnian. It's the final initiation into Mr. Reed's occult realm, the Brotherhood of Saturn, which in fact did utilize Aleister Crowley's Thelema and John Dee's Enochian language, which you saw the Enochian-esque language on the doors of the inner chambers when she went down that hidden passageway there. And also a prominent member of the Brotherhood of Saturn was a man named Albin Grau, who was an architect, right? Just like Mr. Reed, who's architecting the diorama, which goes back to Freemasonry. The grand architect is what they called God. They believe they could transmit esoteric knowledge to the audience via symbolism. And that's why Albin Grau was the architect for movie sets like Nosferatu. That's right, the Brotherhood of Saturn. So Sister Barnes dies the third time, and we got the butterfly reincarnation, and you know, three symbolic of the story of Christ. He was in the tomb for 3 days, the Holy Trinity, and you've got, of course, the Irish death and rebirth rituals. We got the death or descent into the black sun, the Saturnian underground, and then being in the tomb, the albedo, and then the rebirth or resurrection, the rubedo, which is depicted with the butterfly. The symbol of transformation. And if we look at the temple room, the two women had to choose one of the doors, the left or the right. And they chose the left door. Now, if you read Lords of the Left-Hand Path, it says something interesting here. I don't know, I'm going to kind of paraphrase through this passage because it's kind of long. In the Orphic or mystery traditions of the Greeks, there are some original contributions to the mythology of the right hand versus the left hand paths. Apparently drawing on mystery traditions, Plato says in his Republic that the dead follow two paths to judgment. The just to the right upwards through the sky, and the unjust were condemned and downward the road to the left. In the Orphic eschatology, it seems that the good and just take the right-hand road and are not reincarnated. They drink of the spring waters of memory and reign with the other heroes, but the wicked must drink from the spring called forgetfulness and so lose all memory of the other world before being reincarnated in this world as a punishment. So this is interesting because they ultimately chose the left-hand path, perhaps unknowingly, and thus Sister Barnes dies but becomes reincarnated as the butterfly, as apparently a punishment. And she is showing us that sort of reborn savior overcoming the Luciferian Saturnian initiation of Mr. Reed. But wait, if she's reincarnated, then that in fact means she is trapped in the material realm. She is being punished, as the Orphic tradition says. In Christianity and Mormonism, it's believed that after this realm, no matter what, you go to another realm. You go to heaven or hell. Or if you're LDS, you go to heaven to populate planets. So to come back into this plane of existence is not a Christian or an LDS idea. It's a bunch of other faith-based systems believe that. But to reincarnate means you failed the process, the occult or Gnostic process of escaping the samsara. You're restarting the wheel of samsara. Because the Gnostics believe you can escape and enter the Pleroma. But if you fail to become enlightened, you are trapped in the material realm once again. So in a way, Sister Barnes reincarnating as the butterfly kind of proves Mr. Reed was right, that we are trapped in a false material simulation world. So lots of ways to, what's the saying? Lots of ways to skin this cat. Or maybe Sister Paxton was hallucinating and there was some willful thinking. I mean, she did reveal at the end, she did know about the prayer experiment. But the whole film, she acted like she was a naive, true believer. But the reality for her was that she chooses to believe. And she said it was a nicer thing for people to pray, even if scientifically it was inconclusive. So, fascinating movie. Lots of hot takes. What do you guys think? If you're on the Patreon, leave a comment in the comment section. I'll take a look. Thank you. Whichever supporter platform you're listening to this on, Apple, VIP section, or Patreon, you're supporting the show. You're keeping it alive. Thank you so much for your support. Hopefully you enjoyed this extra long analysis. My goodness, you're probably so tired of me talking right now. Hopefully you enjoyed it. I got lots of more shows coming out soon. Some bangers coming in your way. I got lots of interviews I'm lining up for you guys. Good stuff coming. All right. Till next time, stay positive.